You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Let's get right to today's episode. I'm going to start with my top thing bubbling in my mind right now, and that's how Victor Oladipo is back, but he's not back. When watching Oladipo, you notice he's about 80, 90, maybe even 95% of what he was before the injury. Stats-wise, I mean, I know he's had only a couple since the return of like real big pop scoring games. He had the 20-point game against Toronto and the 26-point game against New York. The New York game was really impressive, but in terms of just one of those wow games, besides New York, I really haven't seen it yet. And New York is an interesting instance because they're such a bad NBA team that I don't know how much I want to count that in kind of evaluating his first five games of return. But if you watch, his three-point shot is fine. It's always been, basically high 30% volume shooting-wise. Right now, I think he's made 8 of 20, so it puts about 40%, or 7 of 20, I'm sorry, so it puts him around 35%, so that's like normal for him. Per game-wise, obviously he eased kind of into his shot takes per game. His first four back, he didn't shoot more than 16. He shot 11 in his first one back, 13 in the next one, and then he put 19 against the Raptors. So he kind of eased his way back in. He was really becoming more of a distributor in his first four games back. He was averaging, I think, a little over 7 assists per game, which is pretty impressive. I think he had 27 assists over four games, so almost 7 per game. But you can kind of tell that he doesn't quite have his beat a guy off the dribble, go to the rim, get a pick, go to the rim, destroy a guy at the rim, make everything close around the rim, like finishing-wise, which is affecting his clutch ability. You know, Victor Oladipo's biggest asset in the clutch was that he could pretty much beat any player in the league to the rim and get the ball on the glass. Hence, like the LeBron game, the playoff game against LeBron, game five of the playoffs last year, where he got switched onto LeBron one-on-one, and he beat him to the rim and got the ball to the glass. LeBron goaltended, wasn't called, whatever it was. But that's the kind of thing he can do. Where he can, when LeBron is at his apex trying, is, I think, one of the best defensive players in the league. Like, when he's really focused in, he doesn't always bring it every night. But in the playoffs, he did against Vito in that isolated play. And you can kind of see he doesn't quite have that ability. Because his clutch stats are not nearly as good as they obviously have been in the previous 100 games he played with the Pacers. I mean, in his first, over the past year and a quarter or whatever he's played with Indiana, he's been probably a top five clutch player. I know most of the stats. They had the stats box up on Fox Sports the other day, and he was top five at most clutch, you know, overall points per game, shot percentage, things like that. He's been in the top five. He was really one of the best clutch players last season, and I was against the Cavs, he stunk it up. I mean, he missed 3 free throws in the last 35 seconds, something like that, where if he made all 3 of those, they would have won the game. If he made one of them, would have gone to overtime, 2 would have won the game. I mean, like, things like that where he just had to make literally probably one of them. They still win that game. I think they go to overtime, they still win. So that was really poor. And the Raptors, the Raptors really swarmed him, and he didn't quite have the wherewithal or something to just kind of, like, kick it out in the corners to one of the open guys. I mean, I know he, you know, he had been deferring. I think he thought against the Raptors, like, okay, I've got to do this. I've been the clutch guy. You know, it doesn't matter if teams double-team me. I've been able to kind of find my groove at the end of games. And he found it on that first nice little 20-foot step-back jumper. But I think defenses still don't trust anybody else in this Pacer team. You can see the Raptors on that final play, Vic got jump-balled on, was he got in the lane and they just said, screw it, we're going to, like, almost triple-team you. I mean, you watch the amount of guys that swarmed on him. If he had notice it faster, he could have turned in the corner to kick out. I forget he was on his right side now, but he could have had two guys in the corner, which I know it's not as good as Vic in the clutch, but you got to go to those guys, especially if they're going to triple team you. I mean, and I don't blame him. Like, I don't think this is something that's going to be constantly coming back and biting the team throughout the rest of the year. I think this is a He is five games into an injury that was pretty serious, that was more serious than I think a lot of Pacer fans and us and kind of realized, and that this was like, you know, his injury was kind of a big deal in terms of, like, it took him a while to get back. I mean, he probably still kind of doesn't have the explosion. He might be in worse conditioning shape, I guess, than he was. I was going into the season because he might have had not be able to practice, to be able to do the weights, the cardio, whatever. And that could be part of it, where he just needs to get back in the game shape. And, this is week two of that return. So maybe he'll finally get his legs under him. And so we'll have to wait and see. But the thing is, if Oladipo isn't performing at the clutch rate he did last year, what made the Pacers special all of a sudden kind of vanishes. I mean, what's made it special kind of this whole year, where last season they were just incredibly effective in the clutch. I mean, words can't even describe how amazing they were at finishing close games and winning, you know, and him getting to the rim, him being able to hit all kinds of jump shots defensively. They're really good at the end of games. This was just two games where they did not have either of those things. And the defensive end, I don't think I can blame him. I don't think it's worth blaming him. And I think blaming him for these two losses is wrong in a sense, because they are a no call away for beating Cleveland, which they should have won. And then leading to Toronto, you know, I guess it hurts because of the lead they had. But realistically, a loss to Toronto on the road, the second half back to back, is not like unexpected, at least. I mean, Toronto hadn't played since Sunday, so they had 3 days off, so Toronto should win this game. The Pacers clearly sort of ran out of gas having to play back to back nights. So I don't take the Pacers' loss to the Raptors as bad. It felt worse in the moment than it probably will look if you go back, you know, when we go in February and look back at the schedule, like, okay, Cleveland, yeah, that game sucked, but Toronto, it's fine. Back to back, they lost. It's what happens. But I guess I'm just concerned that if Vic doesn't get his end of game heroics back at some point, this team is kind of heading towards, instead of kind of, I thought they were maybe heading for something special where they could win like 50 games and make a real run at the top three seed, they might kind of fall back to that 45 to 50 win number where I kind of had originally. I just thought the way they had played, really in their 7-game win streak and without Vic, had kind of given me this hope and this thought, well, you combine that 11 games without him and bring him back and they figure out how to mesh it, like, this team may be actually more special than we think because they're deep and they've got a lot of guys who've got experience. They might, you know, in a year where the East is really void of a team who has that collective experience that's dominated, you know, you've got the Raptors who got a kind of a different team. Yeah, they were the one seed last year, but they really haven't had, like, they've had a deep playoff run, I think it's 2 or 3 years ago. It's a total different team with Kawhi, and it's just a different kind of, you know, how deep that team is. Some of those guys just weren't on those teams that made that kind of deep run with the Raptors. You know, Boston has made a couple of deep runs, but again, it's a different team when you throw in a younger Tatum who really has 1 year of experience like that, and you throw in Kyrie and Hayward, you got a different team there. And then Milwaukee obviously is really young and new, and so is Philadelphia. So you kind of had this weird year where maybe the right combination of a really good player with deep team and experience, which is kind of what the Raptors are doing, could win you the East. And, you know, there's maybe a chance that they're as good as Toronto. You know, Toronto, I mean, I don't want to, you know, hang the terribleness or the albatross of Toronto's past playoff moments on this version of the Raptors team, but maybe that somehow continues. Like, there's that thought. And so, you know, what I've watched from them before these past two games was something that was like, oh, this team might actually be kind of special and have a legit shot at making the East Finals, maybe making the NBA Finals. Like, I mean, that's probably exaggeration and probably too far of a jump, but I thought this team was kind of heading towards a way that, oh, this team is really good and could do something special. And if, you know, if they don't have that Vic clutchness, I'm not sure they can be special. But I can't really keep that if he passes that ball when he gets kind of swarmed, they might win that game because, you know, turn it to three in the corner, whoever else, the other guy or somebody else cuts the rim. Like, he's got to recognize that and make the play. And I think that he will eventually, if teams continually keep doing this to him, he'll stop trying to be the hero. And I'm sure Kristaps was telling him, look, Vic, you had this guy open. Yes, you're the best clutch player, but you got to get rid of it. You know, if they're going to triple team, you got to get rid of the ball. It's just the way it is. And you got to rely on somebody else to win the game. And they've done that. I mean, Collison has hit some game winners for this team. So there are other guys who could win the game. But I'm just concerned, but hopefully, you know, he'll find his way through it. And luckily, they don't have a terrible schedule coming up in terms of at least the next kind of six games are pretty easy. You got Brooklyn, Washington, Atlanta, Detroit, Atlanta, Chicago. So they could be on a 6-game win streak over the next about 10 days. But let's take a quick break, and then I'm going to preview this weekend's games. All right, welcome back into the Locked On Pacers podcast. Before the break, I had teased the Pacers have a pretty easy schedule. So part of that easy schedule is that this weekend, they get to play the Brooklyn Nets on tonight on Friday. This is Pakistan on Friday, and they play Washington Wizards on Sunday. Both teams are pretty bad. Brooklyn is better than is ninth in the East at 15-18. Washington is 12-20. I'm gonna go one game at a time. I'm basically gonna do the three things kind of to watch in each of these games. The Pacers have played both these teams before this season, so there is some, you know, knowledge or experience. The Pacers beat Brooklyn last time they played them, the third game of the season, 132-112. It was a routing of sorts. Vic had 25 points in that game. Kyle Quinn played that game. I remember that now. Because right, Sabonis didn't play in this one. I'm trying to remember why. Did he have an ankle injury? Did he have some kind of injury? I have to refresh my mind why he didn't play. But let's get to the three things to watch in this Nets game. The first thing to watch is, really the first stat to notice, is the Nets are not nearly as bad as they've been in the past. So they rank 12th in offensive rating and 22nd in defense. That translates to a little bit of a better in terms of they're scoring the 16th most points per game and allowing the 18th most. Their point differential is 0.6, minus 0.6, which is actually the same as their offensive defensive rating net difference. This is a compared to last year. Let's put it, for example, they were almost 4 in both those categories. In 2016-17, they were 7. I mean, this team has been, you know, go back even more. It's 8, and they were bad. They were really bad in the past. This team is not nearly as bad. They're a mediocre playoff team. What I mean by that is they're probably going to hang around for those somewhere as the 6 through, let's say, 11 spots. I mean, Washington, Nets, Heat, Magic, Hornets, Pistons are all within 4.5 games of each other, and they're probably all going to kind of mix around for those last 3 spots in the East. There's kind of this class of top 5, and next, and that's kind of fall in that class, which is interesting because it means that they'll be a tougher out than they've been in the past. The Pacers have played really well against the Nets in the Vitor era. I know they lost some bad games with Paul George back in the day, a couple years ago, it's not that long ago, but they've been pretty good at beating the Nets in the past year. I think they beat them every time they played last year, and this year, obviously, they beat them the one time they played. The next thing kind of watch for the Nets is their guard play. So their probably best two players are Spencer Dinwiddie, and I guess you would throw Russell in there. I guess you could maybe not throw Russell in as their best player just because he's kind of a high-volume scorer and shooter. He's not shooting that great. But Dinwiddie is one of those guys who, if he wasn't on the Nets, any team would love to have him. And what I mean by that is that he's just, you know, he's averaging 17.5 points per game off the bench, basically. He's got a 48-37 shooting split in terms of two-point field versus three-point field, which is pretty solid. I mean, I guess it could be theoretically better, but it's a pretty solid number. And he's just, he makes plays, I guess the right way to put it. He's just a solid NBA player who probably, maybe is a fringe starter on a playoff team, but is definitely, you know, your sixth man off the bench. He's really there. He's the Nets sixth man. You know, for example, their last game against the Bulls, which will be the last game they play until they play the Pacers, he had 27 points. I mean, I think he's a really good NBA player, and I think he's probably the butcher in this game if I had to put one. The other players to watch, kind of in part of the same kind of second point, is, I always love the Jared Allen, he's in second year, which is the Miles Turner-Jared Allen-Texas matchup. That should be interesting, as always. But overall, I guess, I mean, injury-wise, Alan Crabb did get hurt on Wednesday, and probably he didn't play in the Bulls game when they played the Bulls on Wednesday, and so he probably won't play against the Pacers, if I had to guess. I think he started about half their game for them this year. He's averaging 26 minutes per game, so he's a rotation player. But again, with this Nets team, it doesn't matter who plays and who doesn't play. This team is, the Pacers beat this team no matter what. You know, the Nets are at full strength. You know, Caris LeVert was there, whatever it was. They should still beat the Nets because the Pacers are a better team. This would be a nice little rebound game for the Pacers, a nice chance to kind of blow off some of that steam for some pretty bad back-to-back losses and some anger. They'll be in Brooklyn, so that's interesting, a little different. But I think this is a solid win for the Pacers. And I really think it's a solid win for the Pacers because I think it's the time when Oladipo exacts his revenge for how he's played. I think he's pretty pissed about the Toronto game. I think he thinks he probably knows he played pretty bad. And there's nothing better than for a superstar when they're angry to go play a mediocre defensive team. He's had big games in the net in the past. And the game similar at home last year, similar time. I think it was like the day before Christmas Eve. I went to this game last year. He put up 38 points against the Nets. So I watch for Vic to have a pretty big night. I think he can exploit whoever guards him, whether it's DeMar Carroll, who will probably put on somewhat, but he's also coming off the bench now for them. So who the hell knows what they do with that? I guess they're probably going to have Hollis Jefferson on him or Joe Harris. But whoever it is, to be honest, I think Oladipo will have a pretty good night and can hold. I think we'll have 20 points to ease if he wants, and the question is going to get to like 30, 35 and really make it kind of one of the signature Victor Oladipo games of the season. Like I said, I think the Pacers win this game, and then I do think they win on Sunday too against Washington, and I'll get to three things about Washington that I think are worth noting. They also played this team, last week? Has it only been a week since they played Washington last, I guess? They played Washington on the 10th. So not quite a week. It's been a little over a week. So it's been it'll be 13 days since their last matchup. They beat the Wizards 109-101. That was Turner's kind of best game of the season so far. That was without Vic. That was Vic's last game out. That was the game where they went up huge on Washington and then sort of had to claw their way back. Otto Porter has been day-to-day. We'll see if he plays against them. By Sunday, he might be ready. He had a knee injury. Dwight Howard didn't play last time. He won't play this time. So that's worth noting. But the top thing I'd watch for in this game is the return of Trevor Ariza. He's the one difference in terms of the Washington side of the ball. In his two games back, he's averaging 17 points per game. He's not shooting great, but he took 9.5 threes in the first two games. That's a lot of threes, put it that way. But it'll be interesting to see kind of as he's getting adjusted to the team and stuff like that. I think he's starting in Porter's place. We'll see if, he gets Porter's job, I guess, at the end of the day. But he's been a player who's been hidden. Let's put it that way. He's been playing on a pretty bad team. He's probably not had a great season and tried that hard. And now he finally has an opportunity to unleash himself and really, even though they aren't that good, he's an opportunity to play better players. Let's put it that way. Like Wall and Beal are two guys that are, they're leagues ahead of Devin Booker right now. I mean, Booker's good, but he's nowhere on Beal or Wall's level. That's the kind of other thing to watch. So Beal had 30 points last time. Leave it there. But Wall didn't play in the last game. And so, you had him, had Vic and had Wall, you might get like kind of a net positive or a net neutral on the court. Reese is kind of that player is like the one plus for the Wizards. But if Wall plays, assuming he will, he's healthy now. I mean, I don't see any reason he wouldn't play. He adds another kind of piece and makes it hard to play defense against them. Obviously, the team hasn't been good this year, so I don't really know. On paper, the Wizards are a good NBA team. But you would assume Beal took 27 shots last time. If Wall's in the game, he only has to take, maybe 18 to 20. You at least give Wall some of those shots. That's interesting to watch. I don't know. I guess this Wizard team did beat the Pacers last year, I think. Two out of three times, if I remember right, the Pacers' only win was the one they got in Washington. So this Wizards team knows the Pacers. Neither of the teams are drastically different year to year. Their best players are still there. The Indiana is pretty much the same team with a couple, role players added. So you do wonder if Washington kind of knows a formula to beat them. But at the end of the day, the Wizards have been pretty bad this year, and so I don't really expect them to win. And the last thing kind of to throw in on this one, the third point, the Wizards on a back-to-back, and it's really kind of a short back-to-back. So they're at home versus Phoenix at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. Eastern, which means they'll get done at 10. They fly to Indiana. Maybe they're in Indiana by midnight, 1 o'clock, probably even closer to 1, and they play at 5 o'clock. So it's a less than 24-hour turnaround in terms of start times. So they play one night at 7, next day at 5. So that's interesting. That's always harder on teams. I don't know why the NBA does that. I think that's really stupid scheduling and really kind of a disservice to teams to make them play less than 24 hours later. What it is. But that should help the Pacers. win this game on top of there's a better team. They beat this team without Vic, so they should be able to beat them with Vic, even with Wall back. Like I said, there, if Wall and Vic cancel each other out, Reza's adds a little something to this team, but is it enough to overcome what really was a Pacer-dominated game until they, you know, the last, they kind of let them come back? So I think this is a Pacer win once again. I think these two are recovery. If I really had a guess right now, I think the Pacers win their next six games until they play the Raptors next time. And then that will be an interesting game because of what happened after the last time, and it's this time it's flipped, so it's at home, which is kind of a bigger deal. And, you know, going against the best team in the East, so maybe that if they bring a little something else to that game. So like I said, the Pacers win both games this weekend. That's all I'm predicting. I don't know how good my predictions are. Remember, I picked them to probably thoroughly beat the Cavs by 20 points. That did not happen. But I think I got a lot of that 7 or 8 game win streak games right. I think I picked and win 6 of those 7. So you can't pick them all right. I mean, let's be honest. I'm not some guru out here, genius. You know, if I knew how to pick every game, you should be listening to me and betting it. But I think they should win these two this weekend, especially if they lost these two earlier in the week. This should be a kind of kick in the butt for this team to get going again. Because if this team ends up losing 3 or 4 in a row, you end up with some trouble where you've got to have some player-only meetings and figure some stuff out. So I think this team wins both this weekend. Take it for what it is. I'm right, let's say, half and half of the time. That is all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me at FreedomAdam5, my co-host Tony East at TEastNBA. There'll probably be a weekend podcast coming out, probably Saturday afternoon. Look for that podcast as always. And then as always, Tony and I will be back on Monday with our weekly show. That is all for today's show. Have a great rest of your day.